Imagine waking up in the year 2040. You grab your coffee, you check the morning news, and you realize something totally wild.
Oh, yeah.
The Republican and Democratic parties, like exactly as you know them today, they just simply do not exist anymore.
Right, they're completely gone.
Exactly. Instead, the government is being run by these entirely unrecognizable political coalitions. Like, one faction is fiercely focused on digital privacy, algorithmic transparency, and, artificial intelligence oversight.
Very sci-fi.
Right. And their main opposition is this coalition built almost entirely around global trade, supply chains, and energy transitions.
Yeah, which sounds, I mean, a bit like a dystopian sci-fi novel.
It really does. But according to this massive document we are unpacking today, that scenario might actually be the most logical, well, the most practical path for the survival of American democracy.
It's a really fascinating thought experiment.
It is. So welcome to the deep dive. Today, our mission is to explore this really incredible piece of source material called Dossier Trump 2015 to 2029.
Specifically, we're zooming in on chapter 16.
All right, chapter 16, which attempts to map out the very real future of American democracy.
And it is just a phenomenal piece of analysis, mostly because historians and political scientists are already looking back at that 2015 to 2029 period with intense scrutiny.
Yeah, they really are.
Because the source material frames those 14 years not just as a bumpy election cycle, you
Yeah.
know, or some standard cultural shift. It frames it as arguably the most challenging era for American democratic institutions since the Civil War.
Wow.
Yeah, it was an era that fundamentally tested the structural integrity of the nation.
Okay, let's unpack this because right out of the gate, I want to be super clear with you listening. Today's deep dive is strictly an impartial look at the source material.
Very important point to make.
Yeah, we are absolutely not here to take political sides or, point fingers or argue over who is historically right or wrong.
Right, exactly.
Our goal is just to explore the document's thought experiments in a light, accessible way. Think of this as looking at the engineering blueprints of a massive, complex machine just to see how it handles extreme pressure.
That's a good way to look at it.
Thanks. So to set the stage, why does this dossier single out 2015 to 2029 as this unprecedented perfect storm? Like, what was actually happening beneath the surface?
Well, the dossier emphasizes that it wasn't just one single point of failure.
Okay.
It was a convergence of multiple immense pressures happening simultaneously. So you had extreme political polarization
Right.
where the middle ground effectively just
Yeah, it
vanished.
totally disappeared.
And at the same time, you had a steep, measurable decline in public trust in almost all traditional institutions. I mean, from the media to the courts to public health,
Everything was being questioned.
everything. Then you inject the chaotic rise of social media and algorithmic disinformation, and all of that is layered over underlying economic uncertainty and deep cultural conflicts.
Which is just, I mean, that's a lot.
It's massive. Any one of those factors is a headache for a nation. But all of them at once.
Yeah.
That creates a fundamental threat to the stability of a political system. It raised serious academic questions about whether the constitutional framework could actually hold together.
Which, naturally leads to the immediate question, why did it hold?
Right.
Because before we can look at where the dossier says America is going between 2029 and 2050,
Right.
we kind of have to understand why the system hasn't already collapsed under all that accumulated weight.
Exactly.
So reading through the source material, I kept thinking about modern skyscrapers, like the ones engineered in earthquake zones,
Oh, that's a great analogy.
because they are deliberately designed to not be rigid, right? Like
Yeah.
if you build a massive tower out of stiff, unyielding concrete, it just snaps when the ground
It
shakes,
breaks, yeah.
right? It breaks.
Yeah.
So instead, they are built with massive shock absorbers to, sway, to groan, and to absorb the kinetic energy of the earthquake without actually falling down.
Yeah.
Is the U.S. government essentially designed to do the same thing?
It really is. The skyscraper analogy is very fitting, but with one major difference.
What's that?
Well, a building's shock absorbers are made of steel and hydraulics, right? But a democracy's shock absorbers are made of people, laws, and overlapping jurisdictions.
Makes sense.
What's fascinating here is how the dossier details these specific structural dampeners. You have a written constitution that anchors the fundamental rules of the game.
Right.
You have independent courts designed to referee disputes entirely outside of the legislative brawl.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a federal separation of powers, meaning the power is so intentionally divided between the president, Congress, and the judiciary that no single branch can easily drive the entire country off a cliff.
But let me push back on that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because critics constantly point to that exact separation of powers as a massive flaw.
Oh, absolutely.
We hear all the time that Washington is broken, you know?
Yeah.
That it's too slow, that nothing gets done because it's just this grinding gridlock.
Right.
So how is a system that regularly freezes up considered a successful shock absorber?
That is the ultimate paradox of the system.
Okay.
The gridlock is a feature, not a bug.
Really? A feature.
Yeah, because the architects of the system were terrified of rapid, sweeping, radical changes driven by, you know, temporary public outrage.
So
they made it incredibly difficult to pass sweeping federal legislation. When the system is under extreme stress and polarization, that slow, grinding nature kind of forces a pause.
It forces people to slow down.
Exactly. And crucially, the dossier highlights that the federal government is not the only engine.
Right, because of the states.
Right. If Washington is totally paralyzed by partisan warfare, you still have 50 strong state governments. State legislatures still pass budgets. They still pave roads. They still fund schools.
That's a really good point.
Power is diffused so widely that a failure at the top doesn't mean a collapse at the bottom.
Wow.
Add in free elections and an active, vocal civil society, and you have this incredibly complex, decentralized network. It absorbs shocks better than a highly centralized, rigid state ever could.
Okay, so if the skyscraper survived the earthquake, thanks to those institutional shock absorbers, the next question is about the people living inside.
Right.
Do they rebuild exactly what was there, or do they completely change the blueprints?
Well, that's what the dossier tries to map out.
Right. And it lays out four specific models for how the American system evolves over the next two decades, from 2029 to 2050.
Yes.
And the authors stress that these aren't like crystal ball predictions, right?
No, not at all.
They are thinking models to help us map potential realities.
Correct. They are scenarios based on how everyday citizens and the leaders they elect react to the lingering trauma and exhaustion of that 2015 to 2029 period.
Okay, let's dive into the first one, which the dossier calls Scenario A, Democratic Recovery.
Yeah, Scenario A.
I read this one almost as a massive societal political detox.
That's exactly what it is.
Like, the public basically looks around at the constant adrenaline and outrage and just says, we are done. We want boring again.
A detox is the perfect way to describe the psychological shift here.
Yeah.
In Scenario A, the sheer exhaustion of constant conflict leads to a massive public backlash against extremes. People simply get tired of the instability.
They just burn out.
Exactly. They start actively demanding predictable, mundane governance. And this demand forces profound institutional renewal.
Like what kind of renewal?
Well, election procedures are reformed to be universally trusted and robust. Independent institutions are purposefully strengthened and insulated from partisan attacks.
Okay.
The political temperature drops, radicalization decreases, and moderate political movements grow in power, simply because their entire platform is promising to just keep the lights on and the trains running on time.
And the dossier points out that this detox has a massive ripple effect on the economy, right?
Huge ripple effect, yes.
Okay, let me ask you this. Historically, polarization and outrage are incredibly profitable.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, media companies, social media algorithms, political fundraising, they all make billions of dollars off of keeping people angry and divided.
Very true.
So why would they ever allow a detox to happen if the outrage machine is, like, their entire business model?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't this system naturally incentivize continued fighting?
That is the million-dollar question. And the dossier addresses it through the lens of economic pain thresholds.
Okay, pain thresholds.
You are right that outrage is profitable for media and political campaigns. However, capital, meaning massive global investments, corporate growth, and bond markets capital, hates unpredictability more than anything else.
Oh, right, because they need to know what's going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. If investors don't know if the rules of the game or the tax code or trade tariffs will wildly change tomorrow, they hold their money back.
They just sit on it.
Yep. So in the dossier's model, the tipping point occurs when the political instability begins to actively threaten the underlying economy. When the outrage starts costing the major financial engines too much money, the big money pulls the plug on the outrage machine. They demand stability.
So it's driven by the wallet.
Essentially, yes. As that predictability returns in scenario A, domestic and international investors gain confidence. That predictability stimulates investment, it drives innovation, and it spurs a massive economic boom.
So the U.S. essentially regains its global footing, not in spite of the 2015 to 2029 crisis, but because it learned how to heavily regulate its own worst impulses.
Perfectly said.
But what if the exhaustion never sets in?
Ah.
What if the media and political incentives to fight just, you know, overpower the economic desire for stability?
Well, that leads us straight into scenario B, continued polarization.
Right.
Scenario B is essentially the new normal.
Okay.
In this model, the democratic system survives, the building is still standing, elections happen on schedule, the courts are open, but the toxic polarization becomes a permanent structural feature of the landscape.
So the detox never happens.
Exactly. The detox never happens.
So what does that actually mean for you, the listener, in everyday life? Like, does it just mean the news is always annoying, or are there deeper consequences?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the consequences are incredibly disruptive to daily life.
How so?
It means the government barely functions in a meaningful way to solve modern problems. Because Congress cannot compromise, they struggle to pass basic budgets, which directly impacts inflation and interest rates.
Oh, wow. So it hits your wallet.
Directly. Your mortgage rate or your small business loan becomes collateral damage in a political standoff.
That's terrifying.
It is. Furthermore, the national gridlock trickles down. Your local school board meetings or city council elections become proxy wars for national cultural battles.
Right. You see that happening a bit already.
Exactly. Politicians no longer spend their energy developing new, helpful policies. They spend almost entirely on conflict management and endless legal battles over every single election result.
So they become firefighters rather than architects.
Yes, that's exactly it.
They just run from one constitutional blaze to the next.
Yeah.
And internationally, allies look at the U.S. as a wildly unpredictable partner. Like, they're just bracing for a total whiplash in foreign policy every 4 years.
Precisely. So the democracy survives, but it is deeply inefficient and stagnant.
Okay, so scenario A is a recovery. Scenario B is a stagnant, miserable gridlock.
Right.
That brings us to the darker side of the dossier.
A scary part.
Yeah. What happens if managing that conflict fails? What if those shock absorbers finally snap?
That is scenario C, institutional crisis.
And the source material calls this the most alarming scenario.
It is the most alarming because this is where the system's fundamental legitimacy begins to evaporate.
Okay, how does that start?
Well, in scenario C, the mistrust grows so deep that the institutions themselves are no longer accepted as valid by a large portion of the public.
Like, they just don't believe in the government anymore.
Right. And the primary red flag here is large, coordinated groups of citizens and leaders refusing to accept election results as a matter of course.
So it's not just a protest.
No.
It's a structural rejection of the rules.
Yes. And it spirals rapidly from there. You would see major constitutional clashes. State governments might actively war with the federal government over jurisdiction.
Like refusing to follow federal law.
Exactly. Refusing to enforce federal laws or recognize federal court rulings. This leads to long-term political blockades where the government just ceases to function entirely.
Wow. And if capital hates the unpredictability in scenario B, it must absolutely panic and flee in scenario C.
Oh, total panic.
Walk me through the mechanics of that. Like, how does capital flight actually happen in a superpower economy?
Well, it happens primarily through the bond market.
Yeah.
The U.S. government operates by selling treasury bonds, essentially borrowing money from global investors with the promise of paying it back with interest.
Right. That's how we fund things.
Right. In scenario C, as the government's legitimacy fractures, global investors lose faith that the U.S. government will be stable enough to actually pay its debts.
So they stop buying.
They start dumping U.S. bonds. And to attract buyers, the government has to drastically spike interest rates.
Oh, I see.
Overnight, that spikes the cost of borrowing for everyone. Mortgages become completely unaffordable, businesses can't get loans to meet payroll, and the economy grinds to a severe, punishing halt.
And the U.S. effectively loses its global influence because its economic engine just stalls out.
Completely stalls out.
That is a terrifying domino effect. Mm. But, and I really want to emphasize this for you listening, the dossier adds a very important caveat here.
Yes, very important.
This collapse is a possible model, but it is not inevitable.
Right.
The system has those self-correcting mechanisms we talked about earlier, which opens the door to the final model.
Scenario D.
Right. And here's where it gets really interesting. Scenario D. A new political equilibrium. because this isn't a return to the past like scenario A.
No.
And it's not a collapse like C. It is a total reboot of the system.
It is a profound political realignment. Scenario D argues that the system adapts to entirely new societal realities. The old political fault lines, the traditional party boundaries that define the 20th and early 21st centuries, they simply dissolve.
They'd go away.
Yes, because they no longer make sense for the problems of the modern world.
I have to say, I'm highly skeptical of this one.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, have we ever seen an entrenched two-party system just dissolve and reboot? It feels like those institutions are way too rich and too powerful to just vanish.
It sounds impossible until you look at American history.
Okay, fair point.
The dossier leans on historical precedents here, specifically the 1850s.
The 1850s, okay.
Back then, the Whig Party was one of the two dominant political forces in America, but they were completely paralyzed by the issue of the expansion of slavery.
Right.
They couldn't form a coherent policy, they fractured, and the party collapsed almost overnight.
Wow. Just like that.
Yep. And from its ashes, entirely new coalitions formed, ultimately giving birth to the modern Republican Party.
Okay, so it has happened.
Exactly. Total realignments happen when the old structures are mathematically incapable of processing new existential crises.
So instead of like a software update, this is more like installing an entirely new open source operating system.
Oh, I love that analogy.
Like the core constitutional code remains, but the user interface, the political parties, the media regulations, the campaign finance structures, it's a completely rewritten by a new generation of developers.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it.
Thanks.
The bitter conflicts of the 2015 to 2029 era don't vanish completely, but they fade into the background. They are replaced by new coalitions forming around technology regulation, the impacts of globalization, and energy transitions.
All right.
And crucially, a whole new generation of leaders steps up to manage this modernized system built for the 21st century.
Okay, so we have four vastly different futures on the table: a detox, a gridlock, a crisis, and a reboot.
That sums it up.
Obviously, the million-dollar question is, what actually tips the scales?
Ah, yes.
Like, if we are standing at the crossroads, what determines which of these realities you and I end up living in?
The dossier isolates five decisive factors.
Right. But rather than just listing them, let's look at how they kind of weave together. The factors are trust in elections, economic stability, social media and information, generational shifts, and leadership.
Right.
Let's zoom in on generational shifts for a second. The dossier says demographic shifts could force Scenario D's reboot. How does a generation aging up actually rewire entrenched political machinery?
It comes down to changing the financial incentive structures of campaigns.
Okay. Money.
Always money. The people voting in 2040 have completely different lived experiences than the voters of 2020.
Yeah, obviously.
So if a new, younger generation decides they don't care about the culture wars of the past, but are singularly focused on, say, the housing crisis or AI regulation, they change how politics is funded.
Through crowdsourcing.
Exactly. Through digital platforms, they can crowdsource millions of dollars directly to candidates who focus on their specific issues.
Just entirely bypassing the traditional party fundraising apparatuses.
Yes. And when you bypass the party's money, you bankrupt their monopoly on attention and power.
Wow.
That is the mechanical force behind a political reboot.
And that ties directly into another factor.
Sure.
Social media and information. The architecture of how we talk to each other.
Yes.
Digital technology is just a tool, right? It has the terrifying capability to isolate us into echo chambers and spread disinformation, which, you know, pushes us towards scenario B or C.
Exactly.
But if those new generations force a restructuring of algorithms to reward consensus and factual accuracy instead of outrage, the tool suddenly fosters the understanding needed for scenario A or D.
Exactly. And both of those factors rest on the bedrock of the first decisive factor, trust in elections.
Right, the most important one.
Can people accept losing? It is the most fundamental requirement of democracy. If trust in the mechanism of elections fails, every subsequent policy debate becomes illegitimate and none of the scenarios end well. The economy crashes. That's the economic stability factor. Because wealth can't act as a cushion for a society that doesn't believe its own government is legitimate.
And pulling all these strings together is the final factor, leadership.
The leaders.
The quality of the people at the top. Leaders have a choice. They can recognize the tension in the system and actively work to build bridges, or they can see that tension as a weapon and stoke the fires for short-term gain.
This raises an important question, and it's really the ultimate overarching analysis of Chapter 16.
What's that?
After analyzing the perfect storm, the shock absorbers, and the four scenarios, the dossier asks, is American democracy actually in danger of dying?
And the answer isn't a simple yes or no.
No, it's not, because we have to define what dying actually means.
Yeah.
The dossier's conclusion is incredibly nuanced. It points out that through the immense historic stress of 2015 to 2029, the basic mechanics of the system survived.
They did.
Elections occurred, courts handed down rulings, power transferred. The institutional resilience, those shock absorbers, they undeniably worked.
The patient didn't flatline.
Exactly. The patient didn't flatline.
Therefore, the core challenge moving forward isn't really about survival.
Right.
Like, the physical structure of the democracy is highly unlikely to just vanish in a puff of smoke.
Mm-hmm.
The true danger, the real challenge, is about the quality of how that democracy functions.
The quality, yes.
Will it be a vibrant, responsive system that solves modern problems, or will it be a hollow, bitter, gridlocked shell that merely exists on paper?
It's the difference between merely surviving and actually thriving.
Yeah.
And the dossier's ultimate conclusion places the responsibility for that quality right back on the public.
On us.
On us. The future isn't decided by an unavoidable historical tide or solely by political parties. It is determined by the willingness of everyday citizens to actively choose to accept the rules of the game.
Even when their side loses.
Even and especially when their preferred side loses. That is the ultimate test that will shape the global democratic order for the rest of the 21st century.
So what does this all mean? We've talked about grand historical cycles, federal institutions, and bond markets, but let's bring it down to the ground level.
Okay.
I want to leave you with a thought experiment to mull over today.
I like it.
If the physical survival of the democratic skyscraper is relatively secure, but the quality of life inside that building is entirely up in the air, what does a high-quality democracy look like in your actual daily life?
That's a great question.
We know a skyscraper is supposed to sway in the wind. That friction and debate are by design. But how much friction, how much argument at your dinner table or your local town hall is actually healthy for a society before it crosses the line and becomes toxic?
It is the defining question for the next generation of citizens.
It really is. And, you know, we're not done with this dossier yet.
Not even close.
Next time on The Deep Dive, we are opening up Chapter 17, and this is where it gets really fun, because it's the ultimate scorecard.
Oh, I can't wait for this one.
Yeah, we are going to look at the author's specific predictions for the future and see what actually came true, what was only partially right, and where they completely missed the mark.
It's going to be so interesting.
It brings some incredible new insights into everything we've talked about today, so you definitely won't want to miss it. Until then, keep questioning. Keep exploring, and we'll see you in the next deep dive.